Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 199. I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Oh, I forgot my name again, Steve Borsch. And also Graham Thickens.
Just back from CES.
And Phil Wilson.
Howdy do.
Oh, I thought you were going to say howdy doody.
No.
That's all right. Well, so we're all sort of surviving with colds and flu.
Sort of.
I don't believe in the flu.
Oh, so you just put it out of your mind and never.
Yeah, never get a shot. You know, just let it roll and haven't gotten the flu.
There you go.
This whole thing seems a bit trumped up by the news media. I don't know why. It just seems like it is.
What?
What?
That the whole flu thing, it's on, if you look at the national news, it's like on all the time. It's like the lead story.
Because
you know, it's like
dying.
There's a school shooting in California, and that gets like the third story after, you know, 20 minutes of flu.
That's because nobody died in a school shooting. That's
why. Well, I know, but in my view, the school shooting is a bigger story than the freaking flu.
Yeah, well, except for young people are dying. You know, two teenagers died in Minnesota, and that's probably why. But yeah, it's kind of like we're thinking it's Captain Trips out of the Stephen King The Stand. You know, that's like 98% of people in the world are die from it, you know.
Yeah, so. I always thought that the book was really good. One of King's better early books.
Yep.
But all of the adaptations I thought were pretty lousy. And I just rewatched the TV one, that the only one that Rob Lowe plays the mute guy.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's really dated.
Didn't hold up, huh?
It's on Netflix. I mean, it's still watchable, but it's I don't know. It just didn't feel right.
I would argue that point with you though, Tim. I thought the adaptation, the miniseries of The Stand, was actually pretty good, pretty faithful.
Oh no, it was very faithful. I mean, King wrote that himself, but if you watch it today, it's on Netflix, free streaming. Just watch it again. It's like, I don't know.
It feels cheesy.
It feels very 80s. Very,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't just
anything with Rob Lowe feels 80s.
And Molly Ringwald. It wasn't just the Brat Packers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, Graham, you got to give us a CES update, buddy.
Yeah, oh, God, do I really have to?
Oh, yes. It was kind of an Internet of Things CES.
Read your news feeds, people. it was everything, you know. But, of course, I wasn't covering the show. I was busy working for a client. So, you know, luckily I was able to break away one day from the iLounge in LVH and get over to South Hall, which is a much bigger hall, and saw some things, including just serendipitously running into our Minneapolis friends SmartThings in the Zigbee booth, where they were quite busy. They were one of about, I don't know, 12 or 15 stations within this particular Zigbee booth, and right on a main aisle and getting a lot of traffic. Ben Edwards was so busy, I couldn't even talk to him. I snapped a picture of him, chatted with one of the other guys who's actually based in Dallas, and said hello to Jesse, the VP of engineering, real quick, and got a little bit of review of what they were showing and so forth. The most interesting thing was they rented a villa, you know, a couple miles off the strip.
Yeah, I tweeted that pic that they have a video.
Right. Yeah, that popped up later. But I heard this on, you know, this is Wednesday morning when I'm hearing this, and he said, yeah, we got TechCrunch coming over. And I said, oh, very smart move. So they rigged the whole house with their, you know, with their system and devices. And so, you'll have to post that video. I haven't looked at it yet, but they got some good play at CES, as did my client, the Sensus touch sensitive iPhone case got over the top media coverage from everybody pretty much. So, Canopy is the name of the company. Sensus is the name of the product. And they did very, very well. And then also in South Hall, I had an opportunity with one of my colleagues to go meet some of the people at the United Health Group booth. And calling it a booth doesn't do it justice. It was a huge presence. I don't know what the outer dimensions were of this thing, maybe 100 by 100, I don't know, 80 by 80, but it was two levels, and had real trees in it with fake grass and sidewalks winding through it. And I did an interview there of their VP of innovation and R&D. Other than that, I got a chance to sit in the whole body massagers. Oh man, was that a popular booth?
Hey, can I ask you a question? Did you by any chance see that Almond Plus? I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a touchscreen Wi-Fi router, and it also does Zigbee and Z-Wave, which are the two of the protocols that SmartThings supports in their hubs.
I didn't run into that, no, but okay. But link in. I did find a really cool sound speaker thing that you're going to be interested in from Sound Matters that I'll tell you about later. Saw that at one of the press events. I went to two press events. The first was Sunday evening, was unbelievably packed, called CES Unveiled, where my client was. And that was probably 3,000 to 4,000 people crammed in a big room. And then I went to another one called Showstoppers Tuesday night, just to kind of walk through. And I found this new speaker thing called the Dash 7 speaker system that you're gonna like for audiophiles. This thing is pretty doggone cool. Huh. I'll put a link into that one. And, found a motorized skateboard, So you run into the weirdest things, I mean, just a little bit of everything at CES. Well,
did you see that Huawei phone that's like over 6 inches big?
No, didn't catch that. No. Who makes that?
Huawei.
Oh.
It's 6.1 inches.
No need. It's a tablet. Move on.
Yeah,
no, I think that's hilarious, though. And then the other thing, that Yoda phone. Did you see that one?
No. The Yoda phone?
Yeah, it's from Russia, and it's one side. It's a regular color LCD. The other side is e-ink, which of course doesn't use any power. So you could like have your schedule or like your boarding pass or whatever on that side of it, and even if your battery ran out, the information's still there.
Yeah, that's what the Pebble Watch uses, e-ink. I did go to the Pebble Watch press event.
When they're going to ship it to Phil?
Well,
probably the 28th of January. Yeah, that's on the last one.
Only 15,000 of them, only the first 15,000, and it could take to April before all the backers get theirs. I grabbed you the swag. Has some great wristband, sweatbands with the Hello Watch thing on it. So
you can pretend like you've got the watch.
Thank you, but I'd rather have the watch. Appreciate it, though.
Well, here's what amazed me, though. And I know, Tim, you put some stuff in the show notes, but, 3M unveiling a 84-inch multi-touch table, Westinghouse. Showing a $300,000 custom-made 110-inch 4K TV. Are these guys, most of the stuff that was there, especially these 4K TVs.
Nobody's going to use them.
Nobody's, yeah. I mean, who's going to buy that? I mean, come on.
Who's going to buy a $20,000? It's not really a consumer device by any means. Jeez Louise. Yeah. I mean, plus, the hubbub about the 4K TV, it's like, what possible source is going to feed that with a high enough resolution to make it worthwhile? I mean, you're not exactly going to be able to plug it in and watch CBS and NBC on it.
Well, except, though, that there was an announcement this week that H.265, the new codec, will actually handle 4K HD and compress it so it can stream. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is, even my wife, who could care less about resolution and still doesn't understand why I had to have a Blu-ray player, we'll talk, and she was sitting there and she goes, "What are all those blocks in the black?" And I said, "Well, it's pixelization." She goes, "Well, why is that?" And we got into this just quick discussion about bit depth and stuff, and she said, "That's okay, I don't need to know." And so, but that's the issue, is you can only pump so much data.
You are such a romantic bastard, I'm telling you.
Thanks.
I got to tell you, and Graham, I know you're probably not finished with the CES update, but pretty boring CES.
Well, you know, not really. I mean, it was great, you know, but the rub is that, you know, the place is just full of smartphone cases. I mean, you know, the smartphone is so at the center of our lives that the accessories for smartphones tend to dominate it. You know, there was a good post by Ellis Hamburger of The Verge on how the Apple ecosystem, even though they're not there, dominates CES.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You know, the Chinese and manufacturers from everywhere with the most unbelievable smartphone accessories, you know, the best of everything. And people, you know, tend to pass it off like, oh my God, not more of those, you know. But there's enough innovations going on to keep most people interested. Here's the most interesting thing that I heard about. I met a guy from the NFL. He's their director of mobile product management. He's actually out of the LA area. And ran into him at a party. And in fact, I was at the same party, Andy Johnson from W3I was there. And I thought, oh, you got to meet Andy, you know, so I'm introduced to him. But this guy told me later, he had you're gonna geek out on this, Steve. He had a meeting with Qualcomm and he saw a demo of a tablet with their Snapdragon chip doing a live decode of an ultra HD signal, 84-inch TV through HDMI. And he said it was delivering 7.2 audio. And they did a demo with and without headphones with DTS software. I don't know what that is. That creates a 7.2 audio environment in standard headphones. And he said, it's a shift in the definition of a tablet for sure. So, you know, there was some wild things happening in the back rooms. I'm sure this was something Qualcomm, you know, was showing in their hospitality suite. That's where a lot of the action is at CES.
For new stuff, right?
Many companies don't even have a booth presence, you know.
Yeah.
Leap Motion, the new, you know, gesture-based interface, they didn't have a booth, but they were damn sure meeting with partners, you know, in the smoke-filled back rooms, you know.
Well, I'm sure Qualcomm is doing that as a proof of concept in order to pitch this chip and maybe sell it.
Yep. Well, they had the lead keynote at the event this year. So they were the big, you know.
No. Microsoft.
Ah, yeah.
Oh my God. Did you see, I've got to put a link in the show notes on The Verge to the recap, yeah. The Verge?
The carnival was that carnival that was the keynote.
Oh my God. Was that hilarious? Yeah. You know, with Steve Ballmer bounding on stage and sort of taking over. I mean, it was like, what?
Monkey Man.
Oh, my God.
But that the Surface Pro looks kind of interesting, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
So even though they kind of weren't there, it's, you know, they got some news out of it.
True. Yeah.
I know.
So, hey, what's the deal with these Jelly Bean tablets? So Polaroid Jelly Bean tablets could give Google a run for its money. What do you think about that, Tim?
The price. I mean, it's $129 for the 7-inch one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to drive the prices way down for, you know, a really decently spec'd tablet. So I thought that $199 was a good deal, but if you can get something that's very similar spec'd out for $129, yeah, who cares?
It's almost a throwaway.
If it has the Polaroid brand on it, you know?
Yeah. Did you find that? But if you look at that article, it was on the Verge or no, it was GBR or BGR, Boy Genius Report. Am I mistaken or are those Window Phone 8 tiles on that shot?
Well, it kind of looks like it, but I think it's like some proprietary weird launcher that Polaroid's put on their, you know, their tablets, but obviously you can change that to something that doesn't look so ridiculous.
Yeah.
So my question is would Polaroid, I, you know, every time I see Polaroid, I don't think of anything other than, you know, the cameras. Now, granted, but it's become, I think Polaroid, the name has almost become so irrelevant that it doesn't matter that they attach it to electronics now. I mean, it's, do they need to change their name, or should they change their name? Or,
no, I think that's their draw, just like Westinghouse. I mean, right. it's a known American brand. It's got some cachet. And these are just, you know, regular generic white box tablets from some Chinese manufacturer that they slap their name on. But the point is that these are getting good enough now that, you know, people will buy them. I mean, $129, that's impulse buy territory.
Well, see, what I'm thinking about too is, there was a guy, his name escapes me. He was one of the co-founders of Revision 3. And he just picked up his Tesla S, and they were giving a walkthrough and he was driving it and so on. And he's showing that, he said, boy, this would have made this would have been much better if it was a 17-inch iPad embedded in the dash, but it was this enormous touchscreen interface. And I just thought, you know, there are going to be Android interfaces in cars like uh-huh. crazy, especially with the price points coming down like they are. I mean, who wouldn't, what car manufacturer wouldn't, you know, put a tablet in there?
Yeah, BMW and Mercedes though are going to put Apple branded stuff in there because that's what their customers have.
Right.
Right. But yeah. Everybody else, people like Ford and Chevrolet, I would think would use something like that. Although I think both of those guys are using the embedded Microsoft Windows stuff.
Yes, they are. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, yeah. So, and you know, that those touchscreen interfaces are very, they're not very advanced at this stage, but they'll get there and we'll see things like this. But, you know, as we see more and more tablets like this that are actually not crap, that are good, that do have reasonably well-developed channels of distribution, we're going to see this millions of these things sold.
Oh, I agree. Say, I just want to just stop for a second and just say that I am absolutely stunned with the quality of the coverage on The Verge.
Oh, well, yeah.
They've got like 8 million people that work there.
Well, I know.
Hey, let me tell you a story in that regard. Yeah, they had, reviewing the press list, which I had access to through my client, they probably had the most people there other than CNET. You want to know how many CNET had there? Huh. CNET had an unbelievable booth presence, but they had 90 editors there, CNET did. The Verge didn't touch that, but they were probably a good number two. I personally noted 25 or 30, I think. And when we got to the press event, CES unveiled, they were waiting there with bells on to cover Canopy Census case. So that was a pretty awesome experience. Also, you mentioned Revision 3 a little earlier, Steve.
Yeah.
Patrick Norton showed up and Veronica great. Belmont did a video interview. I mean, we were like styling. I mean, we had all the press who mattered hovering around us.
That's
cool. That's good. It was an awesome experience. There was so much video being shot in that place. And I mean, it was like shoulder to shoulder press. It was really fun. You know, met a lot of the great folks from the different sites, you know, Gizmodo and Gadget, PC World. God, we had them all. We had the LA Times there. You know, we had a live interview. This was fun. We had a 6 a.m. bell the next morning back at the Mandalay where CES Unveiled was, which is at the other end of the strip from, you know, the convention center and the main hotels. We had a 6 a.m. live segment with NBC LA. I kid you not.
Cool. Did you guys jog down there or did you take
that? That was an experience, yeah, in a cab. But to see, you know, how the pros do it. I mean, this guy had a cameraman with all the technology you can imagine and was literally doing 30-second delay, live segments. We were his second one of the morning. So, it was fun hanging around the media people that cover this thing because it is amazing.
Graham officially has PR wood.
Well, I got to tell you that, the thing about this is a little bit of a side note, but, The Verge is part of Vox Media And Vox Media has three publications. They've got a big sports publication called SB Nation. They've got The Verge, and they've got this video game publication called Polygon. And so I started to dig in because I wanted to really learn about what platform they were on. And it turns out that they've got their own proprietary platform called Chorus. Mm-hmm. And they won't sell it. They're just using it for themselves. I'm sure they'll license it to somebody at some point. But one of the cool things it does, and I was seeing this happen at the CES coverage, was that if you want to add an update to a story that they have, mobile tools, apparently. They didn't show these, but they have mobile tools that you can actually just call it up, type in the content. You don't even have to place it in the page or anything, and just update it. Boom, it's done. And you can correlate articles together and do things that, Tim, you and I would look at WordPress and go, that's a no-brainer. But this stuff happens, and happens dynamically, and image resizing and all kinds of stuff. It's pretty amazing. I looked at this compared to where Vignette was early on, and I see this as being the Vignette of publishing.
Yep.
Yeah, they built that for SB Nation. So the Verge people, who most of the leaders were at Engadget before, they didn't kind of bring that thought over, because Engadget's been running on Blogsmith for years. What Calacanis had built for all of his Weblogs Inc. properties. So that's a proprietary blogging platform too.
Yeah.
And I think they're still using it over there. I don't think they've switched to anything.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But man, all these guys with, something like, I don't know, 6,000 press registrants show up at CES out of, 150,000 overall. But, and I have to tell you, I got a press pass for myself so I could get into some of the press events, and the Best Buy logo was on the press passes. So everywhere you went, you're seeing Best Buy logos. Oh, and that's my funniest story of the whole trip. You want to hear it?
No.
On the way out, I got to tell you this. On the way out, I'm back in like row 33, and one of my friends here from Minneapolis, Cammy Zimmer, was, like in the row behind me, and we're chatting, and she's like across the aisle behind me, and she was there for a Seattle client called UI Evolution. But anyway, I decided, I'm going to get up, stretch my legs, walk back to the restroom, and I walk back, second row from the back. Are you ready? Hubert Jolie is on the aisle seat.
Hubert Jolie.
I walked by him. I thought, well, I'm not going to interrupt the guy. But I looked back and I thought, that's not really him. And he had binders on his table with Best Buy logos. I thought, that's Hubert Jolie. All right. So on my way back from the restroom, I thought, you know what? I got to at least say hi to the guy. So I said,
bonjour.
I waited till later. I went back to my seat and I thought, I don't want to bother the guy. He's busy. He's going over numbers. He's got a lot on his mind. And I thought, nobody's recognized him yet. And I turned around and some other girl did recognize him, was chatting him up. And I thought, okay, all bets are off now then. So I tweet, I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did.
Tweet.
Yeah. Robert Stevens connected with you.
Why, you will be delighted to know that Hubert Jolie is riding back in coach here with the rest of us peons. So Robert Stevens sees it immediately because I'm on Wi-Fi on the plane, and says, oh, yeah, tell him I think that's a really good PR move. So I thought, well, crap, now I got to go talk to him. So after a little bit, I walked back there and said hi to him. And I said, my friend Robert Stevens says to say hello, and thought it was pretty cool that you're sitting in coach. And he goes, oh, where is he? It's like he thought he was on the plane. I go, no, he's in San Francisco. I'm like using Wi-Fi. I didn't say that. But anyway, yeah, that was something else. And of course, then everybody started talking to him. And but I think he did it on purpose, no more company jet.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yep. You're going to do a turnaround. You're not going to be flying around on the company plane.
Yep.
Right.
Or flying in first class,
That's right. So that was a way to start the trip.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, here's another piece that happened out there that I think is worthy of comment. And that is the Internet of Things Consortium.
Yeah, I thought you could get your resume together for them for the executive director of that, Steve.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Like,
what an incredibly, you know, it's just such a great name. It just comes tripping off the tongue.
The Internet of Things. Who came up with the Internet of Things as a thing? You know what I mean? Yeah. It sounds goofy.
Well, it was done back in the 90s. And it was, I'm trying to remember the history of it. It was some writer or some guru that came up with this. And
I'm with the IOTC. I'm with the IOTC.
Yeah, but here's why this matters. the reason it matters is that if you want to look at a marketplace, which I've done because I've done these two studies that are Internet of Things related, if you look at the marketplace and you really see all of the vendors that are creating all of these proprietary hardware and software initiatives and have products, and you see how fragmented everything is. If you're on the customer side, you're not quite there yet, but major chains are buying sensors and buying wireless hubs and so forth and wired hubs and setting up notifications, and there's SaaS offerings in the cloud and so forth. And there are some standards that have emerged like Z-Wave and Zigbee, but for the most part, it's kind of a crapshoot. It's all over the map. And it really needs some kind of a standards body to get people to agree on things like APIs
protocols. that's not a guarantee that it's going to work, because I can tell you, speaking from direct experience, trying to wrangle podcasters together to set up standards through the ADM, not necessarily an easy thing to do. It may be a little easier because we're talking about a little more technical and interfaces, but boy, I tell you, it's just not an easy thing.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right.
It's hurting cats.
It's hurting cats. Well, speaking of Uber Jolie and Best Buy, they had a nice little bump in stock price this last week with the holiday. You know, it's interesting to see that, you know, if your holiday season results are flat, that means good stuff. So
they
flat,
were actually down.
So flat. Yeah, exactly.
Flat. They were down almost 2%.
They were down, but not as much as analysts expected.
Not as much as they thought. Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh,
but
geez.
Yeah, so down is the new up then. Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're making it up in volume. Come on,
they're making
Phil.
It up in volume. But I just found that interesting. So, you know, there are people out there rooting for Best Buy, obviously, because they don't suck as much. So let's go ahead and buy some stock.
Well, Barry Judge got a new gig.
I don't know. Is that hopping onto a sinking ship?
I was kind of getting worried for the guy, so it was good to see that he popped up at Living Social.
Yeah.
Does he have to move to Seattle? Is that where that is? Or
no, I think they're in Washington, D.C.
Oh, they are. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. Huh. I would think
I don't know.
So.
Is that a good thing, or is Living Social over?
Well, Groupon's still around. I mean, but I think all these flash sale sites are, you know, they're in trouble.
Yeah,
and, it's sort of like a flash in the pan, so to speak.
Yesterday's news would be how I just
Tim just chuckled at his own joke.
Yeah, that was a good pun. Anyway, but no, it's seriously there's one in the wine world called Lots 18, which was super. You know, last year it was 2011. It was very hot and up and coming, and people thought, wow, this is going to be the future. And now they're laying off people and kind of hunkering back into being basically not really a flash sale site, but like a wine club kind of a thing. So you subscribe and you get wines over a period of time. So, you know, I think this whole era of the flash sale, the Groupon Living Social, it's probably ending.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's run its course.
So. Yep. So,
that's
but
Barry is
so difficult. It's so difficult. For
maybe us. Maybe he can figure it out though.
Well, bring back the mojo.
It's difficult for the retailers to make money off a deal. I mean, it's a great, you know, piece of promotion, or you got to kind of almost write it off as advertising. But
I
haven't spoken to anybody that's done a Groupon or a Living Social and said, oh, I'm going to do that again.
Well, I wonder what the, if you looked at the average local business that does a Groupon, and, you know, I'm sure that they get tons of new customers, but how many of those customers come back?
Yeah, that's
funny. How many pay full freight?
Well, you know what's funny about that is that my wife and I were talking about that. She really wanted to go to Rice Paper on off 50th in France, behind Amico's, and so we went over there for dinner on New Year's Eve, and so we get ready to pay, and she hands me this her iPhone, and she had her coupon on there. And I said, oh, I didn't even know you had that. And the woman comes and she does the whole thing and so forth. And we got one meal free. And, but the kicker is that my wife's been back there twice and I've been back there once. And this is just since New Year's Eve. I mean, it's a fabulous restaurant. So yeah, maybe we're atypical because most people don't, to your point. They go and they get the deal and they never show up again. So,
or you know what I smell? That's the coming. Rumbling.
What do you smell? What do you smell?
What I smell coming for Living Social is a Super Bowl commercial if Barry's going there. Maybe with, that's yeah. why they hired him. You know,
with Justin Bieber.
With Justin Bieber, yeah, right. And Ozzy Osbourne.
Look out! I'll be looking forward to that one. God. Oh my goodness!
No, it'll be Blake Shelton and Justin Bieber.
Ah, there you go.
They'll update it. Yeah, there'll be a twist.
Speaking of young stars, I walked right by Ashton Kutcher. I was looking down at my iPhone, and my colleague said, "You just walked right by Ashton Kutcher." I go, "What?
What's he doing there?"
And she says, "Yeah, you almost ran into him." And I go, "You're kidding me." And she says, "A good thing you didn't, because he had a really big bodyguard with him."
And I go,
"Shoot, I could have hit him up for some angel investments for some of my clients." You know, he's a big time angel investor. Including in Iowa-based stuff, right? Particularly Dwolla, I think.
Dwolla,
yeah,
I think
exactly.
Some money in Dwolla.
Des Moines,
because he was just basically discovered in what town in Iowa, Phil? Council Bluffs or somewhere. He was just like discovered one day, and you know, now he's.
But he got his start as an underwear model, didn't he?
Well, that's a good way to start, you know.
I suppose.
Calvin Klein underwear model. I've got a buddy who sets part of his Twitter bio.
Yeah, he's gonna play Steve Jobs in that movie coming up pretty soon. But he is such a bad actor. I can't imagine that being any good.
Yeah, Cedar Rapids. He was born in Cedar Rapids.
Cedar Rapids. There you go.
Who Ashton Kutcher was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Went to Washington High School in Cedar Rapids. I've been there a lot of times.
He was discovered there. There was some movie shoot going on or something, and he was like the bus boy or something, some weird story like that. My son was telling me this. And, you know, one of the directors or producers says, "Who is that guy?" And they go, "Well, he's like the bus boy or whatever he was, or the janitor." I think he was a friggin' janitor. And they said, no, bring that guy over here or something. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know the full story, but it sounds like it's one of these, you know, Hollywood stories of somebody being discovered.
All right, doggone it. I'm going to start hanging around movie shoots.
Oh, yeah.
Right now.
Let's do it.
Yeah, because there's so many of them in Eden Prairie.
Exactly.
My son's working on one right now. You know, my son Chris is in the film business. He does set design and props and that kind of stuff, and he's working on some movie that it's a low budget thing, but it's a follow-on to Fargo. It's like, what happens to that money that got buried? Remember the end of Fargo? But it's not the same producers or anything. They're running with sort of their own sequel to Fargo. I don't know what they're going to call it, but he's working on it. They're going to start shooting next week, about a month long project.
Sure, the Coen brothers really think that's a great idea.
Well, the Coen brothers, of course, have shot here. And what was that last one they did? And my son worked on that, too. So, you would think that the producers could get in trouble. But I think they're, like, so below the radar. This is a low-budget thing that, you know, I don't know how something like that works, you know, if they're spinning off an idea like that, you know. I hope they have good lawyers. They're going to prevent them from getting sued.
Graham, are you wrestling with the dog?
Yeah. No. Are you like broadcasting from your bed or?
No, I'm in my chair and I'm kind of moving around.
Yeah, we're hearing this.
We're hearing every bit of it. So it's
I'm straight. Right. I'm just like straightening my wire. I don't have wireless headphones, so
you sound like you're like in a hamster cage or something, routing around in the papers.
I wasn't doing much, but apparently this cheap headset picks up a lot of noise, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Was that good? So for $35, it picks up everything, huh?
Hey, listen, yeah. when I was kind of scouring that report from Boy Genius, I was looking at this headline that kind of caught my eye. Apple is done, and Surface tablet is cool, according to teens.
Yeah, what's with that?
Did you see that? And I kind of dug into it a little bit, and I. You know, they're quoting BuzzNet. Buzz Marketing Group. Buzz Marketing Group. So I went to check on Buzz Marketing Group. There's no mention on their site or in their press releases about this comment of, you know, teens are telling them that Apple is done. It's like, that's kind of the dumbest headline I've seen with absolutely zero backup to
it. It's all link bait.
Yeah, it is.
Teenagers desire the Surface tablet. I can see the Galaxy smartphones from Samsung because those are actually pretty good, and you could argue that they're better than the iPhone in certain ways. But the Surface tablet is just—it's a great first attempt, but it's not there yet. It's
from a guy who has teens who are actively living and breathing in my house.
Yeah,
It's
but they still like Apple stuff.
It's all Apple.
I like that. Did you see the first comment on here? It says other things that teens think are cool: Twilight, eating cinnamon, Rebecca Black, and planking.
Oh God!
I thought that was just a classic comment.
Well, and then we're also gonna if they put in there somebody comments and the Minivate Gang podcast, then we really know the article's bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
teens are not going to listen to this.
Well, I think there's one nugget out of the story is that, you know, iOS has really not substantially changed in a long time. And Android has substantially changed in the last 6 months. So, you know, I think that Apple is a little bit behind. And over, you know, after a while, that's going to take a toll. But I'm sure they'll catch up. They always do.
Yeah, well, you know, there's two schools of thought, though, because the one thing that people have talked about over and over and over again is building muscle memory. And it took a year for even early adopters with the original Mac to be able to build muscle memory. So they knew when they wanted to quit an app what they had to do. Oh, go to file and quit. And it got to the point where it took a year for people of using the machine to build that intellectual muscle memory to know where stuff was without even thinking about it. And the argument about iOS being relatively stable rather than static is that people know where things are. They've started to organize, you know, their apps into groups in little folders and so forth. And now they know where things are and not to change that too dramatically.
Right. So, change hoses up productivity.
It can. But then, you know, the challenge always is, because Tim, you and I've talked about this before. The challenge always is how do you satisfy your power users? How do you satisfy the people that are pushing you forward?
BlackBerry 10, that's how you do it.
Yeah, right.
That's it.
Right.
That's it. That's
the future. As you're saying all this stuff, I thought, well, that's why BlackBerry is the way it is. Is it? It hasn't really changed since the early 2000s.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Still has crappy screen. Still has that text based OS. You know, just.
I see. I saw a little. Maybe it was Engadget. I don't know. I saw something pop up. There was an attachment you could get for your iPhone that would put a keyboard on it to make it look like a BlackBerry, make it feel like a BlackBerry. It's like, come on, people, really? Move on. So I know that Steve wants to highlight the next generation iPad and iPad Mini rumor that they're going to come out with a new generation.
If the iPad Mini comes out with a Retina display, I'm going to buy a 64 gig Verizon iPad Mini Retina.
Okay, well, that's great.
Yeah,
but again, you go back and this rumor is based on a Topeka Capital Markets analyst comment based on what he saw at CES. You know, did you read this quote? Our checks at CES indicate Apple will release the iPad 5 and the second generation iPad mini this March. How do you get that when Apple's not even at CES?
Right. Supposedly they're talking to suppliers.
Well, didn't they just come out with the new iPad? I mean, like in November?
But I'm just, you know,
Why would they come out with another one? Like
suppliers
4 months
only are
later
for cases. I mean, what, you know, that's what's the supplier? The supplier that's in question is cases. Is the size of the next generation going to change?
No.
Well, it'll probably be thinner. I mean, if past this prologue, right?
You think? How come?
Yeah. I think they'll make it thinner because that's just what Apple does. There's no like intellectual reason to make it thinner. They just do.
They're not going to do that. But in March, again,
no. There's no way. I would believe it if they're going to do a refresh of the iPad line. It's going to be probably late summer, early fall, something like that. You know, like September timeframe, something like that. And they'll probably come up with a new iPhone at the same time.
So, guys, you know, I was looking at some of the, you know, obviously there's the bendable screens that are now being showcased, well, at CES, and we've seen a lot about that, you know, the flexible screen. I'm trying to think of what that application, what's the application for that?
People that sit on their phones. Yeah, people that sit on their phones. Yeah, right now they break the screens.
Well, and the other part is being able to build displays into fabric. So imagine that you're making a sofa, and you want to have an Android based remote control built into the sofa. You could build a hard one in there that is a touchscreen, but what if you could have a flexible display? Or what if you could have a flexible display? No, I'm serious. If you have a curved wall.
But tell me, you know, I understand the concept of, you know, you put it in your back pocket, it won't, but you don't have a solid surface to engage with. You have this flexible little surface. And
I don't think it's that flexible.
Well, I don't know. It sort of looked like that in the Samsung.
I think that they're not going to have a roll-up phone or anything. I think it's just going to be used as a way to make the phones more durable so that if you do drop them or sit on them or whatever, they don't shatter the screens.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, I can go with that. Thanks very much for clearing that up, guys.
Well, would you really buy a phone or a tablet
that
you roll up? I mean, that's ridiculous. And I wouldn't buy a t-shirt with a screen on it. Just want to go on
record. Or a sofa.
Where did you come up with the sofa?
I don't know. I was just thinking of it being built into textiles and so on. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the nanotech realm with stuff like graphene and polymers that you can apply current to, and you can change color. So in theory, you'd be able to have a wall, you know, with wallpaper on it that you can flip a switch and it would change the color and stuff like that.
This is getting way too geeky for me.
I know, but what if you could build a display into that, or you could build a display into a wall or into something that, has a flexible interface.
Yeah, but I think building displays into things is counterintuitive. Everybody wants to take it with them. They don't want it built into something.
Well, in the Internet of Things world, Phil, you're going to have displays everywhere that you can control stuff with.
Speaking of the consortium leader.
Yeah. So what else is going on?
Let's run down some of the events. I think one event of note is they just rolled out and announced that the overnight web challenge is set for the 9th and 10th of March.
Yes.
So I think that's a big deal. Tim, are you going to do another one?
I'm looking at it.
Okay.
I may not be able to do it, but I'm going to participate in some which way.
We'll see. If you're not on a team, what would you do?
Well, no, I would help out. I've been on the one from the MSP WordPress group for the last 3 years, and you know, I would just help them, you know, pre-event. You know, if I'm not on the team, I would help them with, you know, what we learned the last couple of times.
Gotcha.
Because we learned a lot.
Yes, I agree. You did learn a lot.
Experience helps.
This is true.
What is this social communities moving customers from activity to revenue? Is that that's the one you talked about last time, Graham, right?
Yeah, that's a Lithium Technologies networking event Wednesday evening, I believe. So I'm planning on sitting in on that one and hearing the latest from their propaganda machine. And, you know, there'll be some interesting folks there, I'm sure, with a lot of the local Fortune 500s, especially, who are the ones that can afford to use lithium, I guess. It's kind of a pricey tool, right?
Yeah.
There's another event Wednesday morning that we should probably get in. It's a MEMA breakfast, kind of a seminar on using interactive technologies in compliance environments. So, you know, healthcare, financial services. There's a couple of guys that we know from the healthcare realm. Ward Tongan from Medtronic is on the panel. Marty Nyman from United Healthcare is on the panel. And then a couple of young ladies who I don't know from the local banks, I think, from maybe Wells Fargo or U.S. Bank or both, I'm not sure. So that's Wednesday morning at the Swedish Institute from 7:30 to 9:30. I'll have to get that link in there.
Oh, they've redone their, or they've added on to the Institute, and I haven't been there yet, but I guess it's really nice.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It is very nice. Yeah, they had another event there. They had that Pandora fiasco there, so that was... that was but it's a great facility. It really is.
And social media breakfast with that ABC News producer
on
Thursday at Best Buy. That'll be interesting.
A nice event. And then Mobile March is set for 2013 on the 21st. And we have just a few days left on the early bird rate. So if you want to get tickets cheap, this is now the time to do it.
And don't forget on the Monday, the 21st, the big data event.
Oh, yeah. 21st of January. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. All day Monday. Yeah. And I'm not sure if you can still get in, but they're now saying they have 800 registered. So they've got to be getting close to maxing the venue out there. But that has a huge cast of local, you know, big data, data science geeks and good speakers and sponsors, major sponsors, and lots of action at that one.
Sounds like a full good event,
a whole
group of things to do. So, well, listen, I think that's going to wrap it up for us. Lots to talk about with CES. I'm glad you're back, Graham, and you had a good time. I'm sorry you're not feeling well, but get better soon.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. I hope to come out of it here and get back to normal.
And Steve, I'm glad you're recovering. And Tim, you're an Iron Man. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Episode 200 next week.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, my God. Is it 200 next week?
It is. That's how old I feel these days.
Well, are we going to do another remote podcast celebration?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Oh,
we'll see.
Old hat to you guys.
All right.
Fine, be that way. All right, well, guys, we'll see you next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Take care.
See you then.